Welcome to Your Move with Andy Stanley. In this weekly 30-minute podcast, you'll discover how to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, listen, and connect. Today is the third part in the four-part series entitled, Taking Responsibility for Your Life. Don't just kneel there, do something. What if someone told you that? It seems Let Me Pray About It has somehow become our get out of responsibility free card. In this message, Andy suggests that when faced with difficult, on-your-feet situations, we make excuses that sound prayerful and honest. But what if the time for prayer passes and you're still not moving?
Well, we're in the third part of this series, Taking Responsibility for Your Life. And since we started the series, we've been saying something together. So if this is your first time, you can sit this out first time around, but we're going to say it a couple times. Here's what we've been saying. We've been asking a question. And the question is, am I taking responsibility for my life? Really? Yeah, exactly. And the reason we say really is because it's hard to see irresponsibility in the mirror. We all feel like we're very, very responsible people. So we're asking this question because we want to continue to be responsible people. So we're saying, am I taking responsibility for my life? Really? So let's say it together. Ready? Am I taking responsibility for my life? Okay, and one more time. And when we get to the really, you got to have more attitude than that, okay? You're just alive. Okay, here we go. Ready? Like we mean it. Ready? Am I taking responsibility for my life?
Really?
Now, today as we continue this discussion about responsibility and irresponsibility, we're going to look at a story that some of you have heard before. Many of you probably have not. It's one of those little, tiny, almost insignificant, you know, why is it in there? Little stories in the Old Testament. In fact, if you want to follow along, we're going to be in the book of Joshua. If you want to find it, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, just keep going. You'll get there real quick. First part of the Bible, Joshua chapter 7. And here's what we're going to discover. So I'm going to let you know up front what we're going to discover together in case you have to leave early or wonder if this is really relevant for you. This is going to address three different groups of us. This story addresses those of us who are very religious and who have a tendency to hide behind our prayers and to mask our irresponsibility with prayer. Now, we've all done this. We feel like we're being irresponsible, so what do? We pray. And then we're irresponsible, so we pray. And somebody points out our irresponsibility, and we say, you know, I'm praying about that. And we hide. In fact, if you're not a Christian or not a religious person, one of the things that you don't like about religious people, in fact, maybe one of the reasons you didn't want to come and listen to this today, is you know some religious people, and they're the most irresponsible people you know. But they're so holy, and they're always praying, and you're thinking, you need to quit praying and do something. Because as Christians and as religious people, it's easy to hide behind our prayers and kind of mask our irresponsibility with religious talks. We're going to talk to that group, so get ready. The other group this story addresses is those of you who have what I call misguided compassion. Misguided compassion. Misguided compassion is you're a compassionate person and you apply it incorrectly. That when you see a person act irresponsible, instead of holding them accountable, you go, oh. And you start creating in your mind all these reasons why it's okay for them to be irresponsible. Well, he didn't, you know, he had a tough start, and, you know, he's not as smart as everybody else in his class, and, you know, my husband didn't come from a good home, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you actually facilitate irresponsibility. So this is a very, very powerful, powerful story, and we're going to read it together, and it's found in the book of Joshua. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Joshua, Joshua chapter 7, but I got to give you some context because this is very important. Joshua is the story of the person Joshua, leader of Israel, leading the Israelites across the Jordan River into the Promised Land. You've heard the story of the Promised Land. Moses is dead. He's led the people around and around in circles for 40 years. They wandered. Joshua is now a military leader, and he's leading the nation of Israel into the Promised Land. And this creates some angst for those of us who try to understand this story through our modern filter. Because essentially, he's leading the nation of Israel, 2 or 3 million people, 2 or 3 million people, into a land where he's essentially going to run everybody off. Now, we know you've been living here for a long time and built these cities, but you got to go because God promised us this land. And when you read that without any context, you think, oh, I don't want God to be that way. So let me explain this to you. We're doing something brand new. And the only way to do it is for you to move in, be an isolated nation, with a completely different worldview, a completely different sense of justice, a completely different view of civilization and socialization and law and order. And so I want you to be isolated from them. I want you to move into this part of the world, and I want you to push them out and take over because I've given them a chance. and years and years and years, 400 years have gone by, and it's a culture that must be eradicated. Now, that's very difficult for us in our modern sensibilities. But as you read the stories of these cultures, you can begin to understand why perhaps God had to take such drastic measures. And that's just kind of the backdrop for the story. So here's what happens. So God is leading through Joshua, the nation of Israel, into Canaan. And the first city that they come up against is the city of Jericho. You remember that story? You remember that song? Josh fit the battle of Jericho. Remember that song? You all learned that song? Sunday school? No, okay. Anyway, and the walls came tumbling down. So the walls came down and the floods came up. That's a different thing. But anyway, so they win the battle of Jericho, and God made that very easy for them. And the reason was God wanted the nation to know, you got to depend on me. Don't depend on your army. Don't depend on your military, you know, prowess. You know, I want you to completely depend on me. And now the next city that they're going to confront is the city of Ai. And Ai is a little itty bitty city. Now there was one thing that Joshua didn't know. God was very, very clear. When you take the city of Jericho, you tell the people, don't you take anything. Don't take their crops. Don't take their gold. Don't take their silver. Don't take anything. I do not want you to enrich yourself. No spoils, okay? Destroy the city and leave all the stuff. That would be very hard to do. And it was really hard for one guy named Achan. One of the people in the nation of Israel named Achan was apparently marching through Jericho or walking through Jericho, and he uncovered some gold and some silver, and he thought to himself, okay, do we really want to leave this here? I mean, somebody's going to get it. Why not me? So he takes this gold and silver. I mean, it's the spoils of battle. I mean, that's just number one rule in battle, you know, finders, keepers, losers, weepers. So I'm going to take the gold and silver, and he takes it into his area where he lived with the people camping out, and he hid it under the corner of his tent. And nobody knows that but Achan and perhaps his family. So Joshua thinks, hey, we've destroyed Jericho, on to Ai, and that's where our story picks up. Joshua chapter 7, verse 2. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho, because they just defeated Jericho. Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth Aven, to the east of Bethel, which means nothing to us, but this is history. So the people who read this went, oh yeah, Beth Aven, east of Bethel, I know exactly where you're talking about. Just north of 285 right there, you know, they knew all that, okay? So this is history, this isn't fairy tale. And told them, go up and spy out the region. So the men went up and spied out Ai. So he sends some spies. The next city we're gonna take is Ai, so go up there and check it out. Verse 3, when they returned to Joshua, they said, not all the army will have to go up against Ai. In other words, you don't need to send the whole army. Send 2,000 or 3,000 men to take it, and do not weary the whole army, for only a few people live there. We checked out Ai, it's nothing compared to Jericho, okay? This is just, I think we show up, they're just gonna run, okay? This is gonna be easy. Verse 4, so about 3,000 went up, but they were routed by the men of Ai. So Joshua sent a small group, a couple, 2,000 or 3,000, which just seems a lot to us, 2,000 or 3,000 men approached and attacked the city of Ai, and in pretty short order, they were routed by this little tiny itty-bitty do-nothing town of Ai, and they all came scrambling back to the camp with no victory, which was a shocker. Verse 5, who killed about 36 of them, they chased the Israelites from the city gates as far as the stone quarries. Again, somebody reading this in the original context would say, oh yeah, the stone quarries, we know exactly where that is. As far as the stone quarries, and struck them down on the slopes. At this, the hearts of the people of Israel, at this, the hearts of the people melted in fear and became like water. So these Israelite soldiers come running back. They've lost about 35, 36 of their guys, and they come back, and Joshua's like, what happened? They're shaking. They're scared to death. They're going, it's unbelievable. This little itty-bitty city, this tiny town, just routed us. And we just thought it was going to be a cakewalk based on what happened at Jericho. And again, they began to think in terms of, oh, where's God? Where's God? Where's God? You know, we thought God was going to do this and that, just like we do when something doesn't happen the way we think it should. Verse 6. Then Joshua tore his clothes and he fell face down to the ground before the Ark of the Lord. That's the Ark of the Covenant, where they believed that was the sort of the focal point of their worship. Before the Ark of the Lord, remaining there till evening, and the elders, that's the leaders, the elders of Israel did the same, and they sprinkled dust on their heads. The implication of this is, God, what happened? God, where were you? God, why would you allow this to happen? God, this is kind of your fault, okay? Because, you know, we were in Egypt, now we're here. We thought we were following you. Jericho was a cakewalk, literally. We just walked around and around. The walls came down. And now this. And so there's all this confusion. Why is this happening? Why is this happening to us? You know, God, you know, why didn't you answer our prayer, honor our faith? Verse 7. And Joshua said, and here's a recording of part of what he prayed. Ah, sovereign Lord, why did you, this is what we do, isn't it? Why did you ever bring this people across the Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? God, why did you bring us here if we're going to be destroyed? We should have stayed on the other side of the Jordan. We were fine over there. If only we had been content to stay on the other side of the Jordan. In other words, God, look what you've done. Did you see that? Verse 8, pardon your servant, Lord. In other words, okay, Lord, this may become like one of those R-rated prayers, okay, and I might raise my voice, so get ready. Pardon your servant, Lord. What can I say now that Israel has been routed by its enemies? The Canaanites and the other people of the country will hear about this. Like, you know how we tell God stuff we don't think God knows. He's telling God stuff he didn't think God's thought about. The people of the country will hear about this, and they will surround us and wipe out our name from the earth. In other words, there will be no more Israel. What then will you do for your own great name? This is his way of saying, God, this isn't just an embarrassment to us. This is an embarrassment to you. God, don't you feel embarrassed that we, your people, the people who represent you, the people who, when somebody says, which gods do you worship? We say, we have no gods, we have no idols, we worship the one true invisible God, the creator of heaven and earth, and you know, we that made all these things. You're the one God that we want other nations to ultimately embrace. I mean, isn't this a little bit embarrassing to you, what's happened? Verse 10, the Lord said to Joshua, stand up. What are you doing down on your face? Stand up. What are you doing down on your face? Joshua, why are you praying? This isn't the time to pray. Well, I thought we were always supposed to pray. No. Joshua, stand up. What are you doing down there on your face? And I think if Joshua were to answer this honestly and God said, what are you doing down there on your face? Joshua would have said, well, I'm pretty much blaming you for all the bad things that have happened. That's what I'm doing down here on my face. Joshua, stand up. What are you doing down there on your face? This isn't the time to pray. Verse 11, Israel. Now follow this. This is so huge. Oh gosh, this is such a giant idea. I don't even know how to communicate it that well. Verse 11, Israel has sinned. Oh, no, time out. Okay, we know the rest of the story. It wasn't really Israel. It's just this one guy, Achan. God, you blinked, but see, it wasn't the whole nation that sinned. It was just this one guy. And God's saying, okay, shh, sit down, I'm not finished yet. Israel, the whole nation has sinned. They have violated my covenant, which I commanded them to keep. They have taken some of the devoted things. Now, the reason the word devoted things is used here is because when God told the nation, don't take any of this stuff, it's like God was saying, I want you to pretend like all of this stuff that all of these nations possess, you just consider that like a burnt offering, a sacrifice to me. You just leave it. I know you could enrich yourself with it, but as an expression of your devotion and as an expression of the fact that you're depending on me and not the nations that you've conquered, I want you to just leave it. It's devoted to me. The gold, the silver, the cattle, the buildings, it's all devoted to me. They've taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen. They have lied. They have put them with their own possessions. Verse 12, that is why the Israelites, don't blame me, that is why the Israelites cannot stand against their enemies. They turn their backs and run because they have been made liable to destruction. That is, God said, I allowed this to happen. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy whatever among you is devoted to destruction. Verse 13, go, he says to Joshua. Stand up, quit praying, prayer time's over. Go, do something. Consecrate, that is cleanse, clean, find this stuff. Consecrate the people. Tell them, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. There are devoted things among you. That is, there are things that should have been left there that you've now brought into the camp. There are devoted things among you, Israel. You cannot stand against your enemies until you remove them. Wow. Now, here's what's so big about this little story, is that here we get a glimpse into what happens in a community of two, a community of a family, a community of a company, a community of a community, a community of a nation, when someone acts irresponsibly. The whole nation has been impacted. They lost a battle over one guy's irresponsibility, or in this case, we would just say disobedience. He knew what he was supposed to do. Everybody knew what they were supposed to do. That's why he hid the gold and silver. You can read the story for yourself. He hid it because he knew he was supposed to leave it. One guy acts up, one guy acts out, one guy gives into his lust, and the whole community is impacted. And when you read this from a human perspective, you'd say, wait a minute, that's not really fair, God. Okay, I mean, I can understand you kind of going after this one guy, or maybe he's killed in battle, or maybe his son's killed in battle, but why would the whole nation suffer because of one guy's irresponsibility? Answer, that's the nature of a community, and that's the nature of a connection of people, that's the nature of family, that's the nature of a relationship, that when one person is irresponsible, not only do they reap what they've sown, but everybody connected to them eventually reaps what they have sown. And from our perspective, it is not fair, but it is still true. It's not fair that you've been like the best husband you could possibly be, or the best wife you could possibly be, and your husband or your wife is irresponsible with their time, their money, their morality, their friends, their mouth, their alcohol, their prescription drugs, whatever it might be, and you've done everything you can. You've gone, you know, the extra mile, you've gone the extra mile over and over and over, and you emotionally, you financially, you in terms of reputation have been impacted, and you're going, but I've done all the right things. Why should I suffer? Because this is the nature of irresponsibility. Your irresponsibility eventually becomes my responsibility. What you sow, I reap if I'm connected to you. It's why we look at situations with, you know, teenagers or kids, and they try to do the right thing, but mama won't act right or daddy won't act right. And we see kids who are continually negatively impacted, not because of things they've done directly, but because they begin to reap in their own life and in their own emotions and in their own worldview what mama or daddy has sown. And we say to ourselves, it's not fair, and we're right, it's not fair, but it's absolutely true, because irresponsibility and responsibility is a community thing. It is not a solo thing. And we can talk all day long about whether it's fair or unfair. It's an irrelevant discussion. The fact is, it's true, because we are connected. We are connected, and your irresponsibility impacts me, and my irresponsibility impacts you. That's why. This is difficult. That's why. We must become very intolerant. Not a good word. We must become very intolerant of irresponsibility. Why? Because irresponsibility ultimately impacts each of us. It's not fair. In fact, it doesn't even work to say, well, that's none of your business. Well, it may not be anybody's business right now, but it's going to become my business. So I'm not going to wait until it's my business. I'm going to confront you now and say, you know what? You're acting irresponsibly. Now, you know what? I know some of you, because we all have different personalities. There's some of you that like confrontation. God bless you, you know. There's some of you that hate confrontation. God bless you too. We need everybody. There's some of you that are right in the middle. But here's the message of this story, and here's the message of the series, and here's the message that we have all seen lived out in good and negative ways throughout our lives, and that's this. You can't be tolerant of irresponsibility. There's no win. There's no win. There is no win. Not only does the irresponsible person pay, eventually everybody connected to them pays. It's not something we should compensate for. It's not something we should tolerate. You say, yeah, but I'm a Christian. I know. That's why you should confront it first. Yeah, but what about the love of Jesus? Hey, read the New Testament and how Jesus confronted people. Confrontation is part of spirituality. And the best thing you can do for an irresponsible person, for their sake and your sake, for the community's sake, for their team's sake, for the company's sake, for the country's sake, is to refuse to put up with it. because irresponsibility is contagious. It is a community thing. It's a family thing. It's a network of friends thing. It's a national thing. It's an international thing. That's why we have to ask every day, am I taking responsibility for my life, really? And in the network of people whose irresponsibility may impact me, am I willing to step up and confront their irresponsibility really before it becomes my responsibility? Because there is a point, depending on our relationship, when your irresponsibility is my responsibility. For your sake, for my sake, for our sake. You can read the rest of the story for yourself, but here's what happens. Joshua does exactly what God says. He quits praying. Amen. In fact, I don't even know if he said amen. He just stood up because God said, what are you doing down there? Stand. Don't even have to say amen. Stand up. This is not a time to pray. This is a time to act. Don't hide behind your prayers. Don't blame me anymore. You need to clean the camp. So they send out a search party and they look all over the camp. And sure enough, under the corner of Achan's tent, they find the gold and the silver. They put it back into Jericho where it was supposed to be. They punish him as an example to the rest of the nation. They attack Ai and take Ai and they move on from there. So here's the question for you and here's the question for me. First to all of us religious people, are you hiding behind your prayers? Are you praying when you need to stand up and do something? Have you been praying about the same thing over and over and over and it's time to stand up and do something? And I'll tell you how to know. Number one, if God has already addressed it in his word, you don't have to pray about it. And as silly and as obvious as that is, as a pastor, you would not even believe the things, and I can't believe they say them to me. I mean, there's some things you think you don't say to the pastor. Things people have said to me that they're praying about. And I'm like, well, God's not going to answer you because he doesn't repeat himself. He's covered that. In fact, common sense, he didn't even have to say, people, you don't have to pray about being honest ever. Just go ahead and be honest, okay? You don't have to pray, I'm serious. You don't have to pray about paying your taxes. That's covered. You don't have to pray about being faithful to your husband or your wife. Covered. You don't have to pray about whether sex is appropriate before marriage. Covered. There's a whole bunch of things you don't have to pray about. And you can pray and pray and pray and pray, but if God has covered it, if God has spoken, then it's time to get up off your knees and take responsibility for your life and quit hiding behind your prayers. The other way that you can know whether you need to pray or act is this. If you're trying to pray your way out of something you've behaved your way into, it's time to stand up and do something. If you're trying to pray your way, you've heard it said you can't talk your way out of something you've behaved your way into. Well, folks, you can't pray your way out of something you've behaved yourself into. Go ahead and pray along with action. Sure, it's not going to hurt you to pray. But if you have substituted prayer for taking responsibility, that means you are an irresponsible person that prays. That's all that means. Okay? If you're substituting prayer for taking responsibility for actions, that just means you're an irresponsible person that prays. That doesn't make you a responsible person. And the truth is, prayer is such a religious activity, and we get up from our prayers or we finish our prayers and we feel closer to God, but that doesn't mean we're closer to God, and it certainly doesn't mean we're more responsible. Yeah, and again, that's the question. Are you taking responsibility for your life really, or are you hiding behind your prayers? And the way you know, has God covered it? And am I trying to pray my way out of a situation I have behaved myself into? So let me ask you two or three questions to kind of get you stirred up. As I've been talking, has anything come to mind? Let me ask you this way. Are there prayers that you pray secretly? Or are there prayers that you may pray with your family that if certain people heard those prayers, they might think, well, I don't see you making much effort. I mean, it's fine to pray about it, but I don't see you making much effort. If so, perhaps God's whispering to you today. I want you to stand up. What are you doing on your face? I need you to get up and take responsibility for that area of your life. If you're praying for your kids but not engaging with them, it's time to stand up and do something. If you're praying for your kids but you're not disciplining them, it's time to stand up and do something. Are there areas in your life, if people heard your secret prayers, would they be tempted to say, yeah, well, I don't see you making much effort? Chances are you need to take responsibility for your life, and you're hiding behind your religion. You're hiding behind your prayers. The other question is this. Are there irresponsible people in your circle, in your network, and their irresponsibility is impacting you and you're afraid to confront them? Their irresponsibility is impacting you, your marriage, your family dynamic, what's happening at school, what's happening at work, what's happening in a fraternity or sorority. Their irresponsibility is impacting you, and perhaps your emotion is, well, but they. Are you compensating for irresponsibility? God bless you that you have a compassionate heart. God bless you that you're able to factor in all the dysfunction in their background. That's a wonderful thing, but ignoring their irresponsibility is a lose-lose. It doesn't help them and it doesn't help you because their irresponsibility eventually becomes somebody else's responsibility. And in our country, part of what we're experiencing in our country is that very thing, isn't it? That we have learned to so psychoanalyze people that we can actually psychoanalyze away our sense of responsibility in confronting people and holding people accountable. Because, I can do this, we can look at any individual and so spin a web to explain their behavior, we decide their behavior's okay. But if you don't hear anything else, hear this. Irresponsibility creates conflict within a person. Irresponsibility creates conflict within a community. It's a lose-lose. And the answer isn't to simply pray. And the answer isn't to simply feel sorry for people, though that's a part of it, and will prepare you better to make that happen, to confront. But the answer is to address irresponsibility. And if you're a person who'd say, you know what, I don't like this because I feel like I am reaping what someone else has sown, the fact is you probably are. And that's not going to change until they either are outside your network of friends or outside the network of people that impact you or until they're confronted. This is simply a reality. So, what do you need to do with that? What do you need to do with your own behavior? What does this story say about how you need to respond to someone else's behavior? And especially if you're a Christ follower, especially if you're a Christian, because we should be the most responsible people on the planet, and we should be the people who are fearless in our willingness to confront irresponsibility within our community, whether it's family community or actual neighborhood community, because we are supposed to love one another. And loving one another means at some point I have to say to you and you have to say to me, Andy, your irresponsibility is impacting your network, your community. Knock it off. That's the most loving thing perhaps someone could say to me at some point in my life or to you as well. So are you taking responsibility for your life really? Or perhaps are you hiding behind your religion? Hiding behind your prayers, or hiding behind your misguided compassion. Perhaps today, God will whisper in your ear, stand up. Stand up. Stand up. What are you doing down there? This isn't the time to pray. This isn't simply the time to be guided by your compassionate thoughts. This is the time to take responsibility for your life. Really.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move with Andy Stanley. We hope today's podcast will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, listen, and connect. Now it's your move. Do something with what you've heard.